Thing and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today is Monday, August 11th, 2014. This is Sally Baptist, and thank you for tuning in tonight. If you want to join the discussion, call in at 347-857-4364. That's 347-857-4364. Make sure you press 1 to be placed in the host queue, and that way I will know you want to talk on the air. Otherwise, you can just listen, and you can also visit the chat room and post comments and questions out there if you'd like. In fact, actually, let me make sure my chat room is up and running. Yep, okay. It appears to be working tonight, so please join the discussion. Tonight, we're going to talk about the election for 2014 and how it impacts the future of our country. What difference does it really make? What happens if the Republicans take over? What would happen if the Democrats take over? And then we're going to talk a little bit about voting for judges. That's another topic that's hopefully I'm going to have a candidate on in the next week to discuss them. They're running for a judgeship for the first time. And we'll talk about what it means to run as a judge and what do you look for when you're trying to decide who to vote for when it comes to a judge? Anyway, we'll talk a little bit about tonight, but we're going to try to get into a more in-depth discussion next week. And before we get into all the ins and outs of this election, which I happen to have my primary ballot as a nonpartisan here in Orange County, Florida, so I'll, you know, share a little bit of that while we're here tonight. But before we get into that, really wanted to talk about the chaos in the Middle East and how our commander-in-chief has finally decided to do something in Iraq, and with my own opinion, I was always skeptical about going into Iraq to begin with. The weapons of mass destruction and all that mess we heard way back when with George W., which I don't have a whole lot of use for the Bush family. That's another story for another night. But the thing is, once we went in there, and once we created the havoc, I'm not sure we were just supposed to walk away the way we did. I didn't want to be there. I don't want more of our troops there. At the same time, we've created such a situation there. And I'm not really sure what the right answer is. I mean, it's a very complicated situation that we created for ourselves, I believe. And some may even go back to Kuwait when we got into it there. But the whole thing is we have a situation. Take the Middle East and where it goes from there. And, you know, due to all the communication we have these days for the Internet and satellite communications and stuff, we know a lot more about what's happening over there. And right now, today, the United States of America is still primarily a Christian country. But that's not going to last at the rate we're going on this on the world. I mean, look at what is happening to the Christians and the Jews in the Middle East. You know, and I've heard some people make the reference to, you know, another Holocaust kind of thing. And, you know, I don't know that that's so far-fetched. I mean, people don't want to say, oh, that would never happen again, but I don't know that's true. Look what the Islamist extremes are doing to the Christians. And we've talked about that here on the show, that the faith says you kill all the Jews and the Christians. Either you convert to Islam or you die. And right now, nobody can prove to me that's not what they do. I don't think he can say this is somebody just sitting here making up stuff. It's not the paranoia or conspiracy theory. This seems to be what's happening over there right now. And we can blame Americans for contributing to the chaos over there. But there's always been chaos in the Middle East. I don't remember there ever being a time when there was peace, because I guess, I mean, I guess you could go back to the Islam faith. It's either you do as we do or you die kind of mentality. Sharia, you know, as the form of law. And, of course, talk about rule of law in this country anymore. It's also bizarre. It's also, I mean, we should be waking up to what's really happening around us. And what I fear the most are Americans who just seem to put these blinders on and just think that nothing like that's going to happen here. And what we've been talking about, all this going on, and I mean, I was listening to various news shows over the weekend, including Fox News and, you know, the Sunday shows and this and that, and it's like, I haven't heard anybody talk about the southern border. You know, I found it really interesting. Once Obama said he was going to start having a air attack, you know, dropping the bombs or doing whatever, his air attack over there and whatever, he all of a sudden, the discussion about the border just totally silenced. If you heard stuff about the border over the weekend, let me know, because I wasn't hearing squat about it. And I find it so interesting because what is coming over our border is invading us now. What is happening in Iraq isn't that far away from happening here. The beauty is right now we still have the right to bear arms, and the American people have the right to defend themselves, even though that's not what this government wants us to do. And I think that's probably one of the saving graces of what we have to protect our country. Because we can't protect, you can't depend on the current commander-in-chief doing anything. And, of course, the former commander-in-chief didn't secure the border either. Never did. He didn't want to. He didn't believe in it. He believed in the North American Union. And I just find it so, like I say, it's interesting and alarming to me when so many Americans seem to still have their head in the sand and they don't realize how close we are to this being on our homeland. What happened in Fort Hood isn't that far away. I mean, what do you think that was about? Well, of course, 9/11. What was that about? And here we've left this border wide open, and we've encouraged the terrorist element to come in. We've encouraged the drug cartel to come in. We've encouraged every type of evilness to enter this country. Say, hey, you want to come kill us? Come on in. That's what you're wanting to do? Come on in. I mean, we hear I don't know who the guy was, I didn't see the name, but one of the terrorists, whether it was someone in Iraq or Hamas or whatever, talking about when they're going to fly the flag of Allah over the White House. And it's like, as an American, do I want to be scared to death, that kind of thing? No. It's not a matter of living in fear in that sense, but it is a matter of being awake and knowing what's going on around you, realizing that border and the illegal immigration period, but especially on the southern border, is the invitation for the terrorists to come in and do what they do best, kill people. It's all going to start happening. That's my own personal belief. Of course, how would I know what's going on in these people's heads, except for what we see on the TV news kind of stuff. But based on what we see happening in the Middle East, if you believe that's really happening, belief of what Thomas Jefferson said, why every American should read the Quran, and what we've known over the history of what the Muslim faith is and what Muslims believe in Islam, that they have to destroy the Jewish and the Christians, nothing but Islam. Kill the infidels. And apparently, I was hearing a report today of a child's head being lopped off. These people are so brutal, and yet Americans are being accused of being anti-children, because we want the border secured and we want these children to stay with their families in Central America or South America or wherever they came from. They came through Mexico, but that's not where most of them came from. Yet we don't seem to want to do anything about this. And yet we don't seem to think this element is coming over our border. How ignorant can we be? Americans should not be this ignorant. 9/11 was a warning. And I think we're getting another warning right now, especially when we have not secured this homeland. We have to face the very real fact that neither the Republicans or the Democrats want to secure the homeland. For different reasons, and who knows if the Commander-in-Chief is trying to import all the terrorists, the Muslim terrorists he wants into this country. Who knows on that one? But there can be no doubt that neither party is serious about securing that border. And it truly is up to the American people to go and secure it. And, I mean, we'll see what's happening with Rick Perry, what he's attempting to do down there. If he's trying to prove that he should be the next Commander-in-Chief because he secured the Texas border, who knows? But, and I'm glad that he's doing it. Don't get me wrong on that one. I am definitely glad that he is doing it. But I want people to remember that Rick Perry in the past was definitely for giving in-state tuition to the illegals. And when all the stuff was first happening with Arizona, Rick Perry did not want to secure that border. But now I guess there's been so much pain in Texas and also the outcry of the American people, he's decided he needs to do something about it, and especially now with this massive influx of children and everything else coming in over that border. But we just have to face the fact that there is no will to secure the border, yet we're over in Iraq. We're defending people over there when we can't defend ourselves. There's just something very sick about it. And, I mean, the frustration to see the Christians are all being killed over in Iraq. And what makes anybody here in this country think that we should feel safe? What makes you think it's not going to happen here next? I see the day when we're going to have the children with these bombs strapped on them, because this attitude, this culture doesn't value life at all. Sharia does not care about women. It's a brutal law. There is no rule of law with Sharia, not really. And I just find it so interesting, as all of this is happening, and if anybody out there has heard anything over the weekend, when Obama first announced he was going to go do something in Iraq routine, I never heard anything else said about the southern border, yet our southern border is allowing the same element that's causing the harm over there, the destruction over there, the deaths over there, is coming in through our southern border and nobody seems to care. I find it amazing. On that note, I see Mr. Rob Smith, and we are going to talk politics tonight. Hey, Rob, how you doing?
Oh, so-so, I suppose.
A person of many words.
Well, yep.
I don't know if you heard me kind of ranting about the Iraq thing. You're more than welcome to share your thoughts on what's happening over there.
Oh, you want me to say something? Well, I think the problems we have today I think our problems today with toast is that the bread we're getting does not have the elasticity, if that's a word, if not, I may have made it up, to be able to properly fit in today's toasters. And I think this is obviously an effort by Al-Qaeda to get in the way of our breakfast wants, and I'm very concerned about it.
Okay.
Oh, I'm
well,
sorry. You want me to be serious? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. What would you like me to say? Yes.
Yeah. It's up to you. We're going to talk about the elections and what it means, in which obviously foreign policy has something to do with elections too. So we're going to talk some about that. But as I was just ranting about what's going on in Iraq and what's happening, we can't even secure our own homeland. And I think people are naive to think that this isn't coming to this homeland here. I just, how long is it going to be before we start seeing some of this craziness here?
Well, I think we are. It's not really being talked about. There's been a clear effort by the Obama administration not to discuss the very clear efforts of terrorism in our country, whether it be Fort Hood or the college situation with a fellow in South Carolina or the one in Washington, there's been terrorism in our country, and it's being relabeled as something else. Just again, everything's a matter of PR spin coming out of the Obama administration, including the little speech he made earlier today, a mere 3 minutes of nothing. In fact, the speech he made, if you go back and listen to it, we've heard it again and again and again, not just from Obama, but we've also heard it from Bush. In fact, I am quite certain I've heard nearly the exact same speech from Mr. Clinton and Mr. Bush Sr. during the first Desert Storm, in which, you know, the same things are being said. Well, we hope for unity, and oh, there's a new president. Oh, this is gonna, everything's gonna change and be good now. It's amazing. You think of someone who's good with words, as Obama is, even if he is distracted by his golf game, might be able to focus for a minute and give something a little different, something a little creative, take off something that, you know, show some bit of improv in this situation, as if I may mention Robin Williams' name at the moment, so who could do that? Obama has proved his inability to do that. The little three-minute speech, just what was it, 3 hours ago, is indicative of his inability to think on his feet.
Well, I have to say, I missed that speech, and I'm really upset over it.
It was 3 minutes. It was pretty easy to miss. It was like going through a very tiny town without even a light on it.
Well, you mentioned Robin Williams, so I did realize, I think you mentioned it to me earlier, that he passed away today.
Yes, he was. He was reported, or rather, a call came in at noon today, and apparently he. This is not official yet, but apparently he did kill himself. He'd had quite a problem with pills, and it was well known back in the 70s. I was a wee child back then, but I remember, I didn't even understand what drugs were. I still don't know if I understand. I certainly don't understand why anyone takes them. I remember, and in fact, that was a that was something that said to me, never take these things. so I didn't.
Yeah.
As I was hearing about these actors having these bouts with this demon, these demons that they could not control, and Robin Williams was one I distinctly remember in the late 70s, and those problems continued into the 80s and 90s, and I remember him talking about his alcohol problems back then, too, and his issues with depression. And here recently, in the more recent few years here, which is amazing because he had some, there was quite a bit of talk, which you may have heard yourself, about doing a second Mrs. Doubtfire that was up and about, being bounced around back in April, was one thing. He's got another Night in the Museum coming out here in the next year, which he just recently completed. So I remember reading about that a few months ago. I'm a fan of his because we need back to the improv, we need folks who are quick, smart, intelligent. That, if everybody wants to bark about evolution, that would be an evolutionary step up if we can keep thinking and using our brains and being more creative. But what keeps them back, keeps them down? How does this all tie into what we were talking about before? Well, one of my little problems with the world, and that is drugs. Here is the epitome of our problem, all rolled into Robin Williams, someone who found themselves able to reach a certain level with artificial stimulants of one sort or the other, whether it be, and they say, whatever, I don't care if it's natural or unnatural, if it's making you think differently, then it's not you naturally. And to keep reaching that, you've got to keep taking it. And there's a pull for that. But at the same time, here's a brilliant person who could reach heights, you know, some incredible creative heights along the lines of greats like Jonathan Winters and Groucho Marx, neither of which had such issues. Especially, I know that very well, of knowing so much of Groucho Julius Marx's past. So here's Robin Williams. And who produces and supplies so much of this? Why, the Mideast. The very ones that are battling right now, and that we seem to be helping to some extent. I think we often are looking at the wrong terrorists. We can point to Al Qaeda, but they can only reach so far. The drug dealers coming out of Afghanistan, tied into Iraq and Iran and so on, that tie into Mexico and the illegal aliens. These are the people who are literally killing off thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Americans I don't know what the killing is, all the details of the killing in St. Louis were about. I don't know if that was drug-related, but so many of these encounters seem to involve drugs to one degree or another, and yet we kind of just pass that by as if it's nothing, and we go, we have all this focus on a little group of roustabouts, and it's not a little, okay, it's not little necessarily, but as compared to those who are producing drugs, to in which we are all expendable, I think there's a big difference between one problem and a real problem, and I think we need to be dealing with a real problem that's hurting our country. Not, I mean, we can play games here with the Mideast and whatever new problem, new person in charge, or whatever silly thing that they're playing with over there. Look, these people are going to kill themselves eventually, one way or the other. Let's not kill ourselves though, and let's try to secure ourselves and our border and keep these crumb bums out of here, trying to kill Americans just so they make money and we die. I don't think that's a fair exchange. That's just my thought.
Well, there's
I went all over the place there, but I hope you saw the focus in the end.
I did actually get the message in there. When it comes to Robin Williams, it's the part that amazes me is these are people who seem to have everything going for them. I mean, when you talk about somebody, why would these people be depressed? They've been so successful and this and that, and why did they need a chemical to help them survive? It's just beyond me as well. But I think you make the other point. You know, we have two different terrorists coming in over the southern border. We have the drug dealer and we have the Muslim Brotherhood, Chinese nationals, whatever.
I think they're one and the same. I think the mistake is to separate the two. But go ahead. That's my opinion.
Exactly. That's a point well taken, that they don't have to come in and kill us with bullets. They can kill us with the drugs. And we're a willing participant at that point. I think that's the real point is, why are we the willing participants to let them come in and destroy us this way? What is wrong with our culture that we seem to need to do something like this? People getting drunk out of their head and whatever else, all the different things they have to do to forget who they are, while you have the evildoers of the terrorists who say, God, this is an easy way to take these people down. Just get them drunk or stoned or plastered or, you know.
Suicide.
It's actually, you know. So definitely another approach to killing us. But the point is, they are coming over and killing us, destroying us one way or another.
As has been said, years back to 2000, during 2011, it was said this over and over again. This shows the skill of those who are not being inoculated with the Western mindset, and that is that if those in the Mideast are patient, they don't have to get us. On September 12th, 2011, they don't have to get September 12th, 2015 or 2035. They'll just eventually get us. Their intent is to do it somewhere down the road. They don't have to do it right away. They're patient. Well, something like drugs or something you can be patient about and watch a country literally come apart, and you can see this country coming apart due to our want of not being ourselves, of trying to disconnect. And our inability, our productivity dropping, and we don't seem to care if our productivity is dropping. We don't seem to care if our intellect is not where it once was. It's amazing trying to have conversations with folks, and I think you and I were talking about this at one point. Trying to talk to young people today, having the very same conversations I had 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, because of the kind, type of work I do. I have to interact with folks, and there is a clear drop in reason, ability of awareness of what is around them, the all knowledge of the very items that may be within their eyesight. They don't that there's a disconnect that was there, dropping as I say as each decade goes by. But today it's astounding, and yet they think they're so much smarter. And I think that's the problem. They're delusional. They think they're smarter because they have an internet. The problem is, you can have an internet, there's something else to use it. It's like people like to say, well, you know, I'm an artist, a cartoonist. People say, oh, you're such a great artist, you have so much talent. You know, talent doesn't mean a thing if you don't use it. If you don't use it, as I like to say my little story, when I was going through elementary school in Orlando, there were three of us, three really good artists. I think I was the lesser of the three, Theopolis Daw, Greg Wilson, myself. Along the way, Theopolis Daw in junior high school literally vanished. I don't know what happened to him. I heard something about him getting caught up in drugs, and he literally disappeared. His sister was still around. I remember his sister being around in high school. I remember her being pregnant, too, which I found interesting. And then Greg Willis, He disappeared in high school. Also, the story was something involving drugs. I was the one who continued on. I think I was a lesser of the three artists, but I'm the one who continued on. I think that kind of points to the problems.
Very revealing of what's happening to this culture, values, core values and principles of this culture when these things happen. Now, I do see another person who wants to kind of join this conversation. So, with the last four digits, 1111, they just hung up.
Come back, old Sheba.
I was just getting ready to click the button for them, and then, oops, there they go. So maybe they'll call back in. But they were disguising their number. But anyway, speaking of which, now we get into the election 2014, which I, in the grand scheme of things, I'm talking the big picture, what's happening locally and nationally. Now, I know you have a couple of subjects on the statewide level to do with drugs that you're going to want to mention of what the impact is. But I'm also talking at the high level, and we talk about Washington, D.C. We can talk about what happens if the Senate is finally now a majority of Republicans and we can put Harry Reid at least somewhat to pasture. Or what would happen if it would stay with the Democrats and by some weird chance the House goes back to the Democrats as well. You know, in my own personal belief, it doesn't matter what happens in either of those houses, neither party will secure that border. Neither has had the will to secure that border, and it's going to be the people, the American people, who are going to force that border to be secure. So that's that, and then, of course, the Florida issue on the drugs. So what are you thinking what this whole thing means? Give me your take on this election, and then we'll just kind of take it from there.
And you mentioned the Florida election or the national election?
Well, I'm talking both, so you can throw it out there pretty much any way. When it comes to the drugs, there's definitely the Florida issue, if you want to put that out there.
There's nothing more insane than the we have Amendment 2 here, where folks are trying to get the legalized medical marijuana, as it's called, and the bleeding hearts out there. I'm floored. I'm floored at how many people I talk to who want this to pass, and almost every single person who tells me this has some little personal story as to why they think they need to vote for this. They completely ignore everything else that's going on, completely ignore all the damage that's done, all the problems involved with it. Not that it doesn't matter. I have a personal, you know, they have a personal story, so they want to go vote for it. So when I try to talk to them, it's kind of rough because usually it's a personal, emotional story, again, bleeding heart about it. And I understand about family and so on. But, you know, first of all, everyone that I've talked to about this who claims to need this stuff, in my opinion, probably doesn't. I'm not a doctor. I just say that a lot of the mental issues that exist out there are issues that we have managed to create in our own minds, and a lot of this has to do I'm going to get way complicated here. It comes back kind of what I was saying about Robin Williams. At some point, he started using this stuff. He reached a level that he wanted to keep reaching. He liked that certain feeling he had. So it was an effort to constantly get back to that feeling. It came to be a crutch, the monkey on his back. So how does he keep getting there? Whatever it was, whatever pathway that was, alcohol, drugs, he constantly reached back toward that. And I obviously somewhat unwillingly, or if not entirely unwillingly, he was unable intellectually to trump it. I believe that's happened to a lot of people in their usage at one point or time of various whatever drugs, and that includes alcohol. The thing is not to start to do that, then you don't have to worry about reaching those levels, and you can actually depend on yourself as a person, as yourself naturally. All these people say, oh, marijuana, it's all natural. Well, you're actually natural without using it. If you use it now, you're no longer natural. But anyway, if you keep reaching it, there's the rub. My feeling is that a lot of folks who feel they need to reach it for various mental reasons is because they have reached it in the past and they feel they need to reach it again, and I think pharmaceutical companies don't help this at all. The Florida legislature has passed a certain level of this to which was approved and signed off by Governor Scott. Thus, that solves the critical issue, which is the real thing that folks get upset about, and that's that children need this for whatever reason. I think that's I understand the reasoning. I've heard the stories. I understand the sorry tragedy of it all. I just don't think you sacrifice everybody else for a handful of people. Not everybody can live. I was talking to a lady up in Canada today about a bill. Bright House. Bright House fired most everybody in Florida, sent all the jobs to Canada and Mexico. I'm pretty upset about that. Anytime I talk to them, I always bring this up. Well, the lady said, well, that's just typical Americans. They don't care about us. I said, well, wait, flip that. The jobs were here. Does that mean you didn't care about us here when the jobs were here? It works both ways. And we need to recognize that you have to look at both sides of these issues. So it is unfortunate that so many people have problems and children have problems, and it'd be nice to save everybody. Can't. Not everybody can be saved. It's not just those children. There's tons of children that can't even be touched. Let's look at all the diseases we can't even touch. Anyway, I'm probably going a little too far here, but the bottom line is that the legislature passed a certain kind of version of marijuana so that this could be done on a medical level. The people who are trying to get this passed right now are very clear. Two things. One is they don't care about the medical part. They just want full legalization. The second part of this is the Democrats want this passed because they don't care if it passes. They just want people going to vote between now and November so that if they feel they're voting for that, they will also vote for Democrats. So there's two driving forces there. The issues here involving this thing passing are horrendous. It's gone to a point. I've learned so much more. I already knew a ton about this. I've learned so much more. I don't even know where to start. Everything from if you're seeing little pharmacies pop up here, there, around, they're popping up because their intent is to be selling. Now make sure you mark note of where these pharmacies are and that they're going to be selling. And notice how close they are to grocery stores and children's places. It should be bothering people a little bit. But you see, the amendment as it's currently written is the most loosely written of all the others involving legalization. It is a hope to get this passed so that it can be used as a blueprint for the pro-drug guys to get it done all over the country. Because the cartels are very much behind this. They want to expand their financial base. They want more users, especially young people, very young people. See, I understand cartels are coming from South America. They're not looking at age restrictions. They don't give a damn if you're 18, 21, or 6. Their thing is they're there to make money. And if you've read anything or learned anything, even in the movies about the cartels, you know that everyone's expendable as long as you keep the hierarchy and the money's made. And that's the bottom line. So they're pushing hard to get this passed however possible because they're looking at billions and billions more dollars than they're already making, and they get to do it legally. That's what the wild thing is. Well, sort of legally. Their intent is to sell their part illegally. While the legal stuff's going to be very expensive because it's going to get a certain tax, which odd is our legislature really hasn't quite determined what that is yet because of it's hard to get all that detail, but there's various variations that are going to be available, and then are they going to get into brownies and cookies and everything else? And then if you do that, then how are you going to – because some of that's now – the way this amendment's written – because it's medical, quote unquote, it isn't specific enough to deal with what variations are going to be available, as compared to Colorado that has many variables available. That of course, it's fully legal there, so it's a very different thing. But because this is so loosely written, with those variables, it makes it very easy then, so you don't have to pay get around the tax. The very people who want this done, the very people who want this thing passed, want to get it passed, so they don't have to pay taxes. Because they know if they get this thing passed, then they can pull up their car in the back lot, open up the trunk, and sell out of the back of the trunk, which is going to be highly illegal. But the police are going to have trouble discerning it, and they know that because that's what's happening in Colorado, California, Washington. Just sell out the back of your truck. While you go into one place to spend $450 for it, you can go back there and spend $170 and get the exact same thing and probably of better stock. that is the amazing thing about all this, and that's exactly what's happening in these other states, to the point that all the other states are all trying to backtrack from this law. The problem is the cartels have a lot of money, and they don't want any backtracking. The other question, one thing we don't know is how, we know the cartels are behind this. What we don't know is how much of the pharmaceutical companies behind this. I would speculate they want to get control of this thing so they can then bottle it and sell it. I no doubt in my mind that eventually will occur. The legal version will be handled by GlaxoSmithKline and so on and so forth, so they can sell a behind-the-counter version and make tons of money. Because the cartels want to be able to sell them there. They never want their end to go away. They can't have it go away. It's too much money. And then the legal side wants to get controls of it so they can sell it, make their cut of it all. I talked to a fellow out of Tallahassee last week who said, well, they're going to be growing it in their backyard. I guarantee you that will be made illegal within the next few years, because that gets in the way of the cartels and it gets in the way of the pharmaceutical companies and or the private growers. The private growers can't have people growing in their backyards or else they can't make money. So they've got to get control over that. I'm sorry, and I could go on.
Well, and the key point is it's money-making, greed. You know, we will, whatever it takes to make money, we don't care what it does to the society around us. And then a society that has become extremely weak, emotionally weak, whatever you want to call it, and I think there's a certain element of it, it's the human nature that's been there all along, but now it seems to be much more acceptable. There is no code of conduct anymore. Do whatever you want to do, whether it harms anybody else, it's the me syndrome to the max. And yet it's truly just, it's the silent killer. I mean, going back to what we were saying at the beginning of the show, we don't really need Al-Qaeda or anybody else to destroy us. We're destroying ourselves, from within. And it takes a lot to understand what makes someone want to do that. I can honestly say I've never smoked pot. I have had a drink, but I have never abused alcohol. I just don't have any desire to. This world's crazy.
I don't like the taste. I have tasted it when I was years ago. I tasted it, and that was it. I didn't like it. I heard one of the discussions on the program The Five on Fox News, and Greg Gutfeld kicked up this whole dust storm about how alcohol, if people want to be honest, alcohol really tastes horrible. Maybe it was red eye. Alcohol really tastes terrible. Why do people drink it? And a couple of people, I have a friend who likes the taste of beer, and that's why he drinks it. If you like the taste, if folks don't like the taste, why on earth are they? Well, I know they're drinking it. They're drinking it because it's the thing to do. It's the thing to do. But I think it's not the thing to do. I think it's terrible. Anything that's stopping us, our ability to reason and understand the world around us, anything that's a deterrent from being able to move forward with our abilities and our goals, anything that is self-imposed, restrictions like that, and artificial as they are, no less, It's sickening. That's a disease right there.
Well, yeah, the need to have something else, the need to try to feel different than that kind of stuff is definitely what the core element is. But I have to tell you, there's a mudslide drink that has Kahlua in it, and it's made with ice cream, and it does taste good to me.
Okay. That's what Gutfeld was saying. He said you start mixing things in it so you can get rid of the taste. That's what he was talking. So his point was you can't stand the actual, or you can't take it straight. You've got to add to it, even if it's ice. You just can't. It's too much.
Kahlua is a coffee liqueur. People don't like coffee, but I mean, when I drink hot coffee, I don't drink it plain, so I drink it with the cream and the sugar or whatever in it. So anyway, on to the next subject, which obviously do not vote for this amendment. That's the key for people in Florida. Let's shut it down now, and let's talk about what's really driving what people are trying to do to their brains and not the medical spin that they put on this. So definitely no on two. But I don't see that particular thing on the on my primary ballot here in Orange County, so I assume that's the one that's going to be on the general ballot. I can't stand when I put referendums on the primary ballots. I think that's so wrong to do. It's so just a way to alienate people, disenfranchise voters who don't know they're supposed to vote in the primary. So we got two. There's a two of them here in Orange County. What's the half cent tax? They want to continue the half cent tax for school. Like, it's done such a wonderful thing. Schools in Orange County are just absolutely wonderful now. And we all know it's all because of the reckless use of money. Yeah.
Yeah, well, this makes me crazy. And as I've seen things, as I've also been involved with something called Kickstarter, it's got me thinking about these kind of subjects. And why are we taxing people specifically for the schools? One of the big complaints we have here in this state is that the older Northerners who come here don't want to pay for the kids in school because they already paid for it up north. Why are they paying for it here? As if they have no connection to it. Then of course they do, and in that sense they should pay as everyone else. However, why don't we do Kickstarter programs to raise money for schools? And we can really find who supports what school. Of course, this is talking about making favoritism of certain schools, and yes, there's someone who's scream racism and all this other garbage, but if you really support the school, you should be able to raise the money for it. And why not do it through something, it doesn't be Kickstarter, these what they call crowdfunding campaigns could be done online, and people could just contribute whatever they want to and bring all the books in school. It is so sad that teachers are caught in the middle of all this. Teachers who are just trying to do their job find themselves being told they're dictated. They have to teach a certain way. They have to use certain materials. They have to do certain this and that. No, you know what? Teachers are having to go buy materials and bring them into the classroom. Let's put that more onto the parents and let them have to do that. If they don't do it, the children. I know this will never go through, but it should be incumbent upon the outside to bring this in. It definitely should not be the teacher's responsibility. And I question whether it should be the school's responsibility. Unless it's a private school, and that's a different thing entirely, then they should, because they're being paid X amount to provide education. So I think in any private education setting, they should provide paper, pens, uniforms, just so they can keep controls over things, if it's a private school.
Well, yeah, a private school, the rules are definitely different there. But what gets me is like, well, don't we remember we had the lottery, and the lottery was going to take care of education, it was going to subsidize it and fill that gap and blah, blah, blah. And we know what's happened with the Florida lottery. These people, they will never stop asking for more money. They will never have enough money. They will take every dime out of us they can, and we'll still get the same crap. And we've got communist core here in Florida. They call it something different now. I can't remember, Sunshine Standards or something stupid like that. But it's just a different version of communist core. So the whole thing is just absolutely ridiculous. I will not be voting for that half-cent tax. I voted against it before. And they play, it's just like they do with everything else. They play it up with the kids. Change for children. Instead of talking about what the real problem is, which is their reckless use of our tax dollars going to things, stupid things like soccer stadiums and everything else. So it's vote no if you're here in Orange County. The other thing in Orange County here, which there's a story on this one, too. It's a proposal to guarantee earned sick time for employees of businesses in Orange County. And Orange County adopt an ordinance providing that employees of businesses in Orange County earn up to 58 hours of sick time each year unless the business provides more with pay required only in businesses with 15 or more employees as defined. Anyway, this is I will obviously vote against that as well. Trying to do that to small businesses doesn't help anybody in the area. It only chases out the small businesses. This is the one that Orange County Mayor Teresa Jacobs and then Commissioner Boyd and Commissioner Thompson, who all three, two of them are up for re-election this time, they were the ones who were playing games when these people went and got a petition for this before. They were texting their special interests and their attorneys and everything else during a public hearing, trying to figure ways to get out of doing this. And they did block it from that particular election, but now it's here again. So this is, I disagree with the referendum, but this is how crooked and corrupt Orange County government is for the games they played to try to keep it off the ballot before. again, I don't want it on the ballot because I'd rather not it be out, rather it not be out there, and I definitely won't vote for it. But at the same time, what they did wasn't right either to corrupt the process. But that's what Orange County is. And now, as it stands here in Orange County, Mayor Jacobs has absolutely no one running against her. Makes me want to puke every time I think about it. I think it started out with like 5 people running for Orange County mayor, and they all drop. And you got to wonder why. Do they drop because they couldn't afford it? Do they drop because they were somehow motivated to? You just kind of wonder on that one. But Orange County just continues to go down the hill between Orlando and Orange County. It's just not the place it used to be. And then the other thing, which I'm not going to go into any of the details of the specific people here, but you know, right here on this one, I've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. It looks like 11 different judges to vote. No, excuse me. It's 10 judges and a school board member. And trying to figure out who to vote for on a judge step. I think you were saying one person was definitely a no-go, which was Katz, I think.
Right.
That not a good deal there. I personally don't know.
Who's he up against? Who's he up against?
Kim Shepherd.
Kim?
Kim. K-I-M. Kim Shepherd.
Kim Shepherd. How do you spell Shepherd?
S-H-E-P-A-R-D. Yeah, S-H-E-P-A-R-D, Kim Shepherd.
Well, Kim Shepherd needs to be voted for, yes. Norbert is...
Yeah. Right now, my goal is to pretty much vote against anybody who's already in office. But the truth is, I don't really know much about them, and I think it's one of the hardest things to vote for because you really have to go out there and study how they voted on things, how they've decided things. It's very difficult to me to be an informed voter when it comes to judgeships. I don't know what the secret is or how you go out there quickly and determine, you know, if you're not in the legal profession, that where you'd be inclined to know more about what's going on.
Did you know Kim Shepherd? It was a state representative out of Jacksonville, apparently.
I didn't know that, but okay.
And now she's running for, she's running... Yeah, how about that? Well, yeah, I don't. That's about all I know at the second. But yeah, she's been practicing for 24 years. I can tell you all the history of it's funny. I've seen the Sentinel. The Sentinel has a picture of her, and they've clearly doctored the photo of Kim Shepherd. I can tell a doctored photo when I see it. They expanded, or they were provided. Let me say that they were provided. Yes, okay, it was provided by Kim Shepherd. Someone went in there and doctored the photo. So it looks like the Sentinel didn't do it. But she, you know, she went to the University of Florida, experienced 22 years running a business focused on law practice, former Ninth Circuit State Attorney's Office, Domestic Violence Director, former House Representative, specialty business contractual law. And her reason why should you vote for her? I believe my knowledge and experience will be a significant and a unique addition to the overall experience of our current bench. I would say because her experience is she has more experience by far than anything that Norbert has. Norbert hoped to get to this position by now, but he hoped to already be a representative, but that never happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, again, I don't know anything about him, so I have no opinion.
No, I can tell you a bunch about I can tell you a bunch about Norbert.
Well, just give us some of the highlights, just to justify the decision.
Oh, he was bounced. He had his license pulled from him for shady dealings. How do I know him? He was actually my lawyer during my divorce. ex-wife's lawyer was a fellow by the name of Roger McDonald. Now, here's the weird turn of events. I actually worked on Roger McDonald's campaign and helped him become a judge. And now here comes Norbert again trying to be a judge, and I'm against him. So it's funny how that works out. But Roger was very impressive, Anyway, but the problems with Norbert was, as I found out, is he is of Spanish and Jewish heritage. So the Democrats were very interested in seeing him run just because of that. But I never saw that Norbert seemed to have the head for, unlike Roger McDonald, my ex-wife's lawyer, the one I had, who was provided to me by a very good friend of mine, because he was known to be a bulldog in the courtroom, and he was. But he didn't have a head to be able to manage or to be a good representative for the people. He's too much of a hothead. And he clearly, the idea was to have him advance in office 20 years ago. Unfortunately, he had his license pulled, he had his license pulled, so he could never pursue that. So now he's basically starting all over again by running for judge. I'm sure the idea and goal is still to get up to either a Senate seat or a congressional seat or something down the road. I think he and I are the same age, so he's in his early 50s.
Well,
there's some quick stuff.
Okay. Well, I definitely know which way I'll go on that one then. And then, like I say, there's a whole list of them in here. It's just when you think about it, here you had personal experience, so you had an opinion there. But it's just for the most part, unless you go out there and try to look at some of their cases, look at their dockets, see what kind of stuff they do, it's just hard to know. I think it's and yet at the same time, I think it's so critical that we understand who we're voting for in that courtroom. And I've recently had my own experience in the courtroom. I'm not going to get into any of the details of that tonight, but I definitely see problems in the courtroom. And what happens there is just as important across our society. It definitely has an impact. And what we see, and I've talked on the show in the past about lawlessness, and I think we are a country of lawlessness anymore. I just the process has gotten so corrupted. And last Tuesday's show, American Freedom Watch Radio, that we do, Bill Federer was on, and he's a historian, and it was just so interesting listening to him talk about how history has played out, how people have different democracies and republics and things have happened, and how they came to fall, and it just seems to be the cycle we go through. Call it a cycle or call it history repeating itself, where we go through this process and then we get to a certain level and then all of a sudden the human creature just doesn't know how to deal with it and they self-destruct in their own way. And I think that's where we're at. And when it comes to the rule of law, I just, at every level, this is the local level, what I've seen locally, this law enforcement, et cetera, et cetera. Then you see what happens at the state level, what the government is doing, the corruption there, and how it gets played by those with money and power, and then up to the federal level. And then, of course, you can take a look at what's happening at our border. What is the rule of law in this country anymore? Because I just don't even see it. Or am I missing something here?
It's open season. It gets back to the whole. I mean, I don't mean to tie everything into the drug thing, but I think we've become a society where we don't really care who we are or what we are, as long as it's all about the sick, insane notions of Wayne Dyer or Robert Ringer. I'm okay, you're okay. Winning whatever it was Ringer's book was now, and as long as you're number one. And everyone else doesn't matter anymore. Well, that's called that's a psychosis of such selfishness that you're exclusion of everyone else, and yet you can still claim to feel bad for everybody, but it doesn't matter because you're number one. And because of that, if you're number one, then you want to create your own rules, your own law. You want anarchy, and I think that's. In talking to folks, that's what I get back from a lot of people. They literally want anarchy. Forget the Constitution. Not the Constitution 200. What's a Constitution? As I was telling you about the a certain police officer I spoke to, he didn't know. Or no, I didn't talk to you. This was before. This was afterward. I met a police officer. His father and grandfather served in the police force. I was talking to him about people that his father and grandfather interacted with. And this fellow otherwise seemed like a bright person, but he had no idea what I was talking about. He had no idea who those people were. He didn't know how those might connect. He didn't seem to really even necessarily care. Not that he I think it's just indicative of everything I'm trying to point out here, is that if you don't understand or care about your past, then you're not going to, none of that matters. The Constitution, what came before, none of that matters, because you're just looking out for yourself. You're just looking out for the moment, of which doesn't exist. Anybody who says, I'm living for the moment, there's no such thing, because the moment just went by. Each moment is also is history. As soon as you say history, when you get to Tory, it's all that moment's already gone. So you're either working toward the future, or you can build from the past. But you can't work for the moment, because there's no such thing. So you've got to be preparing and working and striving, which is what our forefathers did. They were always looking for the future. They weren't just trying to muddle themselves into a psychedelic ideal of something that doesn't exist, like the moment.
Well,
so that's why I don't
see,
believe
I
that's,
call this that's, the, yeah, I was gonna say I refer to this as the Mimi syndrome. It's and I think it started with the baby boomers big time. I think there's maybe an element of it in human nature, no matter what, but definitely with the baby boomer mentality towards the end of it, whatever. It's all about me. You're number one. Do whatever it takes. It's all about me, the me, and that's why I call it the Mimi syndrome. And I want to have fun. I'm going to do what I want to do. And if it hurts anybody else in the process, that doesn't matter. If it harms anybody else in the process, that doesn't matter. It's all about me. Do whatever it takes. Now, of course, when they came up with do whatever it takes or just do it routine, I think the initial was to work hard and be successful. Don't give up and keep going and work, you know, to be successful. But I think it got totally slanted. Maybe it was those drugs that did it. I don't know. Where the attitude is, it's all about me, and I'm going to do whatever it takes, and I don't care who gets in the way. And I find it kind of interesting, as we're talking about this, that this ruling came down about the college football players. So I think, you know, that they're going to be compensated. Getting a free education wasn't enough compensation for them. And at the same time, I see how they were, how the schools exploited the money they could make at the football games and the sports and basketball and stuff like that. So I think we should forget college is no longer about education. It's a sports event, entertainment and sports event. Forget actually learning anything there, because that's really not what the point is. And just kind of realize that we've changed the whole meaning of what a college education should be. Now it's just a sports arena, you know, around-the-clock games, whatever you want to call it, because I don't see it as being, it's no longer the focus of education. It's the focus of going there to play sports to make money and then, you know, show up in a classroom from time to time, but don't worry about reading or passing anything because they want to make you stay on the team or whatever. You know, it just, it all comes down to the same thing. It's not about progressing in the right way, as in improving yourself and learning more and becoming a stronger individual for the community at large, for the society. It's about going out there and seeing how much money you can get for playing a game.
Yep.
And of course, we know, talk about drugs. How much drug abuse is there in pro sports? And I'm sure there's some in college sports as well, but it will get even worse in college now that they are making it a even more so for profit, and now that these students are now going to be given a salary. Of course, I'm real curious to see how they're going to be taxed for this, because now they're employees, so they should have to pay the same kind of tax, and I don't think they did that before. It's all pretty crazy what they've done to it, but it totally defeats what the whole athletic scholarship process was about, and the football and the basketball games and stuff were supposed to help bring some revenue to the school to help it make ends meet kind of thing. But now the focus is making sure you go to the right school because it's got the good football team. And that's really it is. It has nothing to do with educating the mind. When was the last time? Talk to a pro athlete, or I should say a college athlete, about the Constitution and see what kind of questions or what kind of comments you get. What kind of comments do you think the average college basketball player, football player, whatever, what do you think their interpretation of the Constitution is?
I don't think it. I just like sports. I have no interest in my sports politics. I like the games where it's bloody and people actually get hurt and have their lives actually ruined forever. The sissy sports of baseball, football. The idea that has any any connection to education is insanity, impossible, should be impossible. But those I talk to who are obsessed with sports or even like sports to a great deal seem to have, again, no idea what's going on around them. They know about the sports, they know about players, they know about Kardashian speak. They don't really know what's going on when it really affects their lives. They want to be able to divorce themselves again to this world where they are the nucleus, and things like sports, they know are over there someplace. They'll hang their hat up there for a while, but they know it's not all the time, and they can always take it down. And it's not a commitment that they have to keep. It's something that they're kind of doing. It's fun and frivolity, but it's just too important because they don't have anything else going on in their lives, and they define themselves by the stupid stick and ball games that they like to follow. It's so sad. So sad. Politics is so much more fun.
Well, you know, that was, I need to go look it up, the Greek word for idiot. This was something that came out in the discussion last Tuesday with Bill Federer, talking about in the democracy, in a new democracy, the citizens were expected to go to the town square and find out what was going on in their government and participate in the process and all this other stuff. And I have to go look up the actual Greek word for it, but it's the it's where the word idiot came from. And I found that so funny. If you were not involved in your community, in your town, and you didn't know what was going on your political arena, you were an idiot. Again, the Greek word for idiot. And I thought, isn't that interesting? At one point in time, if you took the attitude that most Americans do today, where you're going to run away from the political process, run away from participating in your government, which is what you're supposed to do, you were truly treated as, you were known as the idiot. And then we have today, again, kind of to the joke of it, the useful idiots, those you can brainwash anything because they have no clue what's going on. I thought it's all kind of interesting, the history of that one. You talk about learning from your history. I thought that was kind of interesting, too. And, yeah. Of course, we over the weekend, talking about sports and accidents, look what happened to this guy in some race car thing where one car hits him, not the regular NASCAR stuff, some other kind of car racing. Don't ask me what it is. I just saw the news thing on it. And he got out of the car and then got hit by another car. It's like, how crazy was that? I mean, that was... I can only imagine how the driver who hit him is going to feel for the rest of their life as to what happened out there. And that was craziness. I don't know. But on that note, let's get into some of the other nitty-gritty of 2014. Now, I put out there, I wanted to talk about, and I'm definitely curious as to your opinion. You and I have been talking about politics for many years. So, and we were both Republicans at one time. You still are one. I'm not. you're still part of the Republican committee, a committee man routine. And I was on the Orange County Republican Executive Committee at one point. Not anymore. Right now, 2014, come November, assume that the Republicans don't totally botch it all up, which they are extremely successful at doing, and they take the Senate. They maintain the House, and they take the Senate. What do you think that truly means for foreign policy? What does this do to King Obama? Does it shut him down? Do you think the Republicans will truly tighten the screws on this guy and not keep funding Obamacare? Do you think it'll do anything for the borders? As I said earlier, I don't think it does because I believe both parties refuse to secure the border. But what do you think, what happens to this country, and why does 2014 matter, if you want to put it that way, to get both houses into the Republican hands?
Why do you think it matters? For the Republican Party, or for me, or for the country in general?
Well, I don't think it's not you per se. It's for the country in general. Not unless you're planning on getting getting some kind of assignment to some position or something like that. But, no, I'm talking about, what do you think it does to the last 2 years of King Obama? Will the Republicans actually shut the money down? Do you think the Republicans will actually secure the border? What difference will it make if we have both houses with Republicans in it?
Well, if I'm going to answer based on the country versus the party. It's, of course, it's imperative for the party for various reasons. For the country, what else are you going to put in their place is the reality of it all. There's nothing else out there even running, and I mean that's all right. That's not true. There's others running, but they're not going to clock in here between now and November. And yes, it would be nice. I would like to see five or six different parties running, but that's just not happening. Okay, so what does this mean for the country? It basically puts Obama in exactly the same position that Bush was in his last 2 years of office. So what is Obama going to do versus Bush? Bush, who was a bit weak in character to begin with, but still pushed for his own viewpoints and had a very strong team behind him who were pushing for their own agenda. Well, so how does that work for the country if you have a team of representatives all coming from the Republican side, and they don't really care what happens, because I believe that to be the case. I believe the general Americans really don't really care much what happens, the bulk majority. So do they care if there is a majority of Republican or Democrat or Libertarian or kittens up in Washington? I don't think they care. They know the difference. I think you could fill the whole thing full of snakes and they wouldn't know. Polar bears. I think you would fill the House and Senate with polar bears and they wouldn't know there was a difference. Especially if you gave each of them a designation of Republican Democrat, because then they'd pick sides and want to be against. Even though the polar bears were all exactly look the same, all be the same, didn't say anything. Well, that's Republican. I hate them, or it's a Democrat and I hate them. You know, it didn't matter. So for the people, I don't think it really matters. There's a minority in the country that are going to push for one side or the other. The effects to the country is going to be how Obama handles having a bulk of Republicans. And then Bush seemed to have more of a backbone and certainly smarter than Obama. In that Obama is only someone who reacts to problems and not well, it would seem that he's going to take a very similar route as Bush did. The difference, and there's a very significant difference here, and I mean, I could get here onto why it's important to the party, but is that the Republican Party clearly does not in any way, shape, or form, nor will it in the next 2 years have anything compared to Nancy Pelosi. That's what made the difference for Bush. That's what got through TARP. That's what got Bush to agree to the banking and all. That's how that happened, was the Democrats had a very, very strong person. Republicans do not. Despite that, though, I think Obama being far weaker, not just in mental spirit and ability, I think also because of what's going to be happening worldwide, which is going to be very different than it was for Bush, is that in that case, even though the Republicans don't have a Pelosi, it's going to be enough for them to get through an agenda they need to, only because I think the world issues are going to be pretty dicey. As I said back in 2007, because I read up on this Obama guy. I said, this guy is an idiot. So many people say, you're wrong. He's so smart. No, he's an idiot. Now I'm hearing so many people say he's an idiot, finally. I just wish they realized that back in 2007. Him being an idiot is central to his inability to get anything done. He's a salesman. He knows how to sell things. He just doesn't have the brains to get it through. So he needs someone else needs to do it for him. Without that construction, because he's actually cut loose prominent people to help him get through things through, I think he's going to get pretty well trumped here. And what I was saying in 2007 was that the Mideast will try to take Israel. Why not? You've got a weak nothing person in the White House, and that's what we're seeing right now. It makes sense. I wasn't predicting this, but it makes sense for the Mexico and the cartels to be trying to take our country from the Mexican border. Clearly, Al Qaeda and the Mideast is involved with that too. It clearly makes enormous sense why Putin is saying, "Look at the United States. They're our only so-called threat, and they're not." Okay, I'm going ahead. I think we're going to see a lot more action there, and it's going to put the Republicans in a bad spot because they're going to have to figure out what to do, because the White House is going to be useless in all this, as they're proving so well. Listen to that 3-minute speech Obama made earlier today. The White House is useless in foreign affairs.
That's
for the people. That's what's going to happen to the people. If you want the political side up for the party, it's another answer.
Well, the net impact to our country is very scary. What we're seeing out there, and the fact is, I think most Americans these days, but definitely a lot of us, just have no faith or no confidence in anybody in public office. I don't know right now with the foreign policy situation. I'm trying to think who is out there with the area of foreign policy that I would feel comfortable with. How they would handle foreign policy, I really don't know. There's some things about Rand Paul that I like, but there's others that I think he tries to play both sides, and you can't do that. And it's not a matter of being an isolationist, but especially in the mess we're already in out there, it's not a matter of just saying pull everybody out. You know, come everybody comes home and just ignore the world out there too. I don't think we can just do that either. But I don't know right now. I mean, definitely not Hillary. Definitely not Chris Christie. I really don't know anybody I would want to be in charge. Definitely not Rubio. I mean, can you imagine a Rubio being the next president and dealing with public or foreign policy? I don't. I mean, would he be worse than Obama? That's not a very good margin to me to go by. Hopefully nobody's any worse than what he has been, but never say never. So I don't really know who I see as a true leader in foreign policy. I just don't know.
I don't like anybody at this point. I mean, I disagree with you that people don't like anyone in Washington. I don't think they're. This sounds awfully elitist, but I'm talking to a lot of people from all walks of life. And yes, they tend to be Florida-based, but there's a lot from outside the state. It's not that they just don't care. They don't know enough to make that kind of. They say it to be able to get out of the question. But if you really start to talk to them, they have no idea what's going on up there. They don't have enough information to be able to make an educated comment like that.
Well. Yeah, you see that all over the place where O'Reilly has his guy Waters out there talking to people, and I guess Stossel has done the same thing. Leno used to do the same thing. When you go out there on the streets and you ask people questions, then it's really pretty pathetic on what the American people, you know, it's like you said, you know, just get stoned and get high and have a party and that's it. There's nothing else to it. And that's going to be the ultimate demise. It's not going to be because we couldn't. I shouldn't say it's not because Al Qaeda or those were smarter than us in that sense. It's that they were more determined, and we were too busy being stoned out of our minds and partying. And you know, so we dig our own grave. We're truly digging our own grave in so many ways. I really do believe that. But I just don't see. excuse me. I don't see anybody that I would look forward to voting for the presidency when it comes to foreign policy. No, Rand Paul, I like him on a lot of other subjects, but I don't know about him on the foreign policy piece. And I don't like Christie. I'm trying to figure out and see who's the Republicans. Of course, John Ellis Bush. You know, that would, to me, be one of the worst decisions, but I can see the Republicans pushing for that person. Outside of Hillary, is there anybody else on the Democrat side who's even willing to talk about running? Because once, you know, the party elitists are going to say, well, you know, Hillary's going to have the choice to run. No one else is going to get in her way. We're not going to let anybody else run.
Well, that may or may not work. that may or may not work. It depends on if she actually, I mean, every indication, even words she said today seem to be that she's going to run, but I think Democrats would be far smarter to get Elizabeth Warren into that spot. She's more, she, well, the experience level's not all that different per se. She has clearly a far better working knowledge of what's going on. And I completely disagree with her, and I would never vote for her, but I'm looking at this on a pragmatic level. She toes the line of the party better. She sounds better. She looks better. She's an overall better candidate than Hillary is, who has – we were tweeting back and forth a little bit ago with some folks. The problem with Hillary is that the only thing you can really point to with any experience – yes, she was in the Senate, but she had about as much experience – well, actually less so than Obama. The only other thing you can really point to is her being Secretary of State, which was a disaster. So what are you going to point to for experience? With Elizabeth Warren, you can not only point to her Senate stint, but you can point to all the other things she did while she's actually held office. So I think or has been active in things, and she sounds so much better if you listen to her speak. Again, I disagree with her. That's neither here nor there. The point is that she sounds better. So that would make her a better candidate. I think, though she is short, I always say the thing that if you're short, it's hard to win a race, which is generally true if you look back in history. So against someone like John Ellis Bush, it would seem difficult. However, I think she would sound and look so much better than Bush. I think she could easily win it for the Democrats. I don't know how Hillary's going to do it. It's going to be popularity, like that's how our Governor Rick Scott got voted. That's how Obama got voted. That's how Hillary could possibly get voted. And obviously she could, because it's happened so many times before. But I'd like to hope intellect might take over and the Democrats would be better to put someone who actually cares about their issues, has a working knowledge of it, and is likely to implement them, because if you have a working knowledge, you can get them through. Obama has no working knowledge of whatever it is I don't think he believes in anything, frankly. He got pushed into all this. He stumbled in, and he's just been kind of pushed along the way. But Elizabeth Warren clearly believes in what she wants to do. I wish we had someone on the Republican side, even if I disagree with them. I don't see anyone who has really strong, clear convictions and are going to care. A lot of folks point to Governor Perry in Texas, but he has certainly shown different points waffling. I'd like to see some consistency there.
Right. Excuse me. And I was mentioning that with Perry. I mean, it's all nice and fine and dandy that he's taken border security a little bit more seriously these days. But in the past, he didn't. I remember him specifically saying he wasn't gonna put a fence up or whatever, the wall or whatever. His attitude was not that he did not see it as that big of a problem. And that was about the same time as he was voting for the tuition for the illegals, in-state tuition for illegals. So he's been both ways. I like what he's doing now if he keeps on that path, but I'm scared when I see somebody who's gone from one extreme to the other. It's like, okay, so they're positioning themselves to try to run again, and they want to show that they have some strength then on that border, because that border is such a key issue to many, many Americans. And when it comes to Rand Paul, he's in favor of securing the border. I don't have a problem there. I believe he would do that. He would be much more aggressive in securing that border. But he has taken somewhat of a different tone when it comes to the amnesty thing. And, you know, it's all fine and dandy to say, well, you can't just go pick up 11 million people and ship them out and all this kind of stuff. No, it's not a matter of that. But, you know, you don't go and reward them with citizenship. Citizenship should actually mean something. And most of these people don't want to be citizens anyway. They just want the money. They want the job and they want the money. They don't care about being citizens. So at least that's what I've seen from many of them. And
well, the good argument to the idea of shipping them all out is the same to the liberal part. To the liberal side is the liberal side is the one who wants to pick up all the guns in the country. If we can't pick up all the guns, if your intent is to pick up all the guns, we should be able to pick up all the illegal immigrants and toss them out if we can toss out all the guns.
Good point. I never thought about that way, but yeah.
Yep. Yeah, you know, the thing is, a lot of these arguments, there's if you flip them into the other thing, they have a problem.
Yeah, this is true. But the biggest problem I have with Rand Paul is he has tried to play both sides. He's not He in his natural state, he is not a GOP establishment type person. That's why he was a Tea Party candidate and all that stuff. Not to mention, his father is Ron Paul, so he was sort of trained in that direction. But because he's trying to play the politics, he's out there trying to play both sides. And maybe this works to get him in there, and then when he gets in there, he goes back to what he truly believes. But at the same time, when I see a person seems to be easily convinced or swayed to go in another direction, is it compromise or is it trying to play the system and try? I don't know. This is what makes our system so disgusting these days, is that nobody can be honest. We can't deal with the truth. You've got to go out there and put spin, political spin, whatever on it. You don't want to go and say anything about those Latinos because you don't want to risk that vote. It, even though it's not about who, there shouldn't be a congressional Hispanic caucus. I'm sorry, that's discrimination, and we shouldn't have that. Our federal government should not be promoting any race over another. But that's what's happening. So why do we keep promoting that? And what will the GOP do anything else? I keep saying it'd be really nice if the GOP would promote being American. But they don't believe in doing that. They're too scared. I mean, the Republican Party, to me, has just turned into a bunch of wimps.
How would you define being an American? And that's where they run into the problem, because you'd be called a racist, no matter how you defined it, because you have to pick a side about one thing or the other. So you become a racist. There's no way to define an American anymore without, you know, getting implanted against the back of the hand.
Well, it's my point. If you're an American, I don't care where you came from. Isn't that what being American is, with the world's largest melting pot? Right?
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Well, say that again.
I said being an American means you could have come from any place in the world, so who cares?
Well, no, but for the Republican Party to state that an American is, and then give a criteria, whatever that criteria is, will go against something that will trigger the tripwire that will have all the racist about whatever, or bigoted about whatever. It doesn't matter. However you define it, you can't make that definition without sounding that way. How do you define an American without sounding racist and bigoted? You can't do it. I mean, you can if you believe in it, but if you're worried about how the media is going to handle it or how the general unknowing public is going to deal with it based on what they hear from the media, they'll get torn apart. And that's why you don't hear anybody defining it.
Well, and just that very statement right there is a major part of the demise of this country, because we can't be Americans anymore. We all have to be in our own little groups and just go back to Iraq, where there are different aspects of the religion out there, where there's like three different tribes or groups or whatever it is. Don't ask me. I don't get into it that much. But there's three different states, in a sense, that these different groups do not agree with each other, so they all fight each other from within. So you already had that division within Iraq, even with the Muslims. So you got that. And so that's what America is. We're not Americans anymore. We're either Italians or Germans or Hispanics, Latinos, or Russians or whatever. We're not Americans anymore. And we cannot be united if we're not going to be Americans. And that's really, to me, it is truly just that simple. So if you want America to survive, we better start being Americans. Excuse me, and stop dividing, which goes into the other stuff too. Are you a woman or are you an American? When you're in that voting booth, are you voting because you're a woman or are you voting because you're American?
Obviously, that's anti-men. No, if you might just take it the next step, I thought you might there, but the point is that to do the very idea that to not be able to define an American would make you thus a bigoted racist shows just how bigoted and racist the people are who are trying to not define Americans, because they're trying to define them by saying that you have to be a certain race, you have to be a certain way, or else you can't be. And that's I was in a grocery store and someone was stocking the so-called Hispanic aisle, and there was a Hispanic Asian aisle, and I was saying to them, isn't this horribly bigoted and racist of you all to create this aisle? Isn't this terrible? And the young lady looked at me like I was out of my mind. I said to her, well, why are you segregating these people from everybody else? It's like 1950s and the ice cream fountain where you told the blacks they couldn't be there, so they had to go over there instead. You're separating it, and isn't that horribly bigoted and racist? And as I explained that, it dawned on her, it is. Now, of course, what I was saying to her is in full realization that it wasn't the store's policy. It's that the very people who shop there are the ones who want. It's the Spanish who want it separated. It's not that the Spanish want mixed in with everything else. They're the ones who demand these separate aisles, and I know that fully, knowing a bit about certain stores and what they're doing. But the very group is the one asking to be segregated. Then who's the bigot and racist? Is it the big store that has this thing in it, or is it the people that are demanding it, or is it the other rest of the customers who really don't care one way or the other and just let the segregation happen? Which is the little dirty secret no one wants to talk about involving civil rights, is that people just let this stuff happen. No one really found it, black or white, found anything necessarily wrong with it. It became a big political football that the Democrats hated and the Republicans tried to get civil rights through because it was important to them, that's the thing about how we define ourselves. We're defining ourselves to a point that we are all bigoted, we're all bigots, and we're all racist, and there's nothing we can do about it. there's no saving us. We're doomed.
Well, there's definitely times when I say there is no saving us down the road. We are determined to divide and conquer. And we are our own worst enemy, not the Al-Qaeda's out there, because we insist on being divided amongst ourselves. And when all this stuff was first hitting the fan about the southern border with all these kids coming over and everything else, I went out there and I was looking. The one guy, the Hispanic guy, Latino from Chicago, he's out there, representative.
So Gutierrez.
Yeah, that's him. That's him, Gutierrez. He's out there saying about we're the biggest for not wanting these Hispanics coming over, the illegal invasion and everything else. And then I go out there and I'm looking. Okay, he's on the Congressional Hispanic Caucus. Is that not bigoted by itself? Why do we have a federal government dividing us up into groups like this? That is where the racist is. And I sent an email to that Hispanic Caucus, and I sent something to that guy. Saying, you know, you're the one who's the racist. Why are you being treated differently? You shouldn't be treated differently than any other American. Americans are supposed to be all treated the same regardless of where you came from. I don't see the Italians being treated differently. I don't see the Irish being treated differently. I don't see the Russians being treated. You know, they are truly the ones that are the racist. And, of course, there'd be a lot of people who'd be mad at me saying that, but you're the one who's the racist. You're the one who keeps discriminating and dividing and segregating people out, not me, you are. But let's talk about who the real racist is. And I don't think our tax dollars should be used to go out there and promote any one group of individuals over the rest. Silly me. So again, we don't need Al-Qaeda to destroy us. We're destroying ourselves from within, because united we stand, divided we fall. And we are very, very divided these days in many ways. The political parties are one of the divisions too. And as you said, you and I both well know, and as you said, you know what? When the Dream Act was for the Republicans wanting the Dream Act, then the Democrats were against it. Well, now that the Democrats want it, the Republicans are against it. I was against it. I didn't care who had it, because it's once again promoting the illegal entry to this country. Now, what do you do with kids who are brought here illegally or were born here illegally? Well, technically, they are citizens. So there is no Dream Act on those if they were born here. If they were brought here illegally, that's a whole other matter, and I don't think you can go and make some standard rule that you're going to rubber stamp everybody and just let them stay here. It goes back to, once again, the rule of law. What does rule of law mean anymore? Do we have any such thing? I can't tell.
Yeah.
You know, not to mention... Yeah, go ahead.
If we don't have a people who care, then what difference does the rule of law even mean then? Nothing. They're just people complaining. They're just people. If some kid tries to beat up a police officer inside of his car and claim that he tries to grab the gun and then there's a firing in the police car and then the police open fire, the kid's dead. Suddenly everybody can run around, break into buildings, steal, take televisions and TVs, basically celebrating. They claim that we're all upset about this person dying. Then why are you going to get a TV? Shouldn't you be standing around crying? Why are you running around grabbing TVs and cars and things? Why don't you be crying? No, it's no rule of law. It's open. It's anarchy. There we are, back to the anarchy world. And the people don't understand what anarchy is. And when they find out, it always leads to dictatorship every single time.
So. It does. So, which makes it even more interesting, because you think the Democrats pretend to be the ones for civil liberties routine, trying to act like they care so much about civil liberties, yet they're the ones who are putting nail in the coffin, destroying civil liberties constantly. But you can't get that through to them because of, I think, the good old public education mentality and the dumbing down of Americans. They can't understand why, when Obama gives you a phone, that takes away from your liberty, because now he owns the phone and you have to do what he says. They can't make that connection. It's just amazing to me. It really is.
Well, it takes part of it to trust that Obama can do no wrong. Thus, if he's in control of the phone, it's perfectly fine. If that was said that it was George W. Bush who owned the phone, those people would then say there's distrust, would not take the phone and hand it back. Now, I think if you try to hand those phones out, the number of people taking them would be far less than it was 5 years ago, because the lack of trust with Obama has dropped so significantly. I think that trust will continue. But that is all not coming from people's actual knowledge of Obama. It's not that they watched 3 minutes of his talk earlier today, which would be enough to have anybody distrust him. But it's just that they're hearing that. I was listening to or had on the discussion about that we're marking 40 years since Watergate, and Woodward and Bernstein, Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward were on there discussing this, and they're talking about how things have changed. Oh, oops, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought there. I started thinking about all that. Oh, darn it. Sorry, that happens sometimes. I lost my train of thought. I started thinking about that, the discussion. There were some interesting things that during that discussion. What was I talking about just before that? Isn't that funny? What was I just talking about before I said that?
No, I got to backtrack that. You got me confused.
I'm sorry. I'm all over the place. I was gonna connect all this. I was talking about something that was happening earlier. I lost it. That was an interesting discussion.
People don't know what's going on, basically. The people are uninformed. That's
what I did get out of that discussion. It was fascinating what Woodward and Bernstein were talking about, and they were doing this. This discussion was being produced by the Washington Post. Well, the discussion did come out of the audience about, well, why aren't we seeing reporters like that today? And their response was that, they think they are seeing those. However, who's really paying attention to anything anymore? Who really knows what's going on? And it was a different time 40 years ago than it is today. I, as a young person, I actually came home from school and would watch the hearings with Sam Ervin. I remember that. I was 10 years old. How many 10-year-olds? I'm sure I'm one of the few 10-year-olds who did that. But there was a significant amount of population who was watching those hearings. If you put those hearings on today, I don't think you'd have many people not only not watching it, but probably putting it down. Bob Woodward was saying was that the Washington Post has just hired, I think, 13 or 12 new reporters. I'm not sure how they're doing that. I think that's a gamble. I think they're going to lose. But anyway, I hope it works. But he said that's an encouraging sign that they're going to try to get back to investigative journalism, so they can investigate things like Lois Lerner and people like that and see what's really going on. So to him, this was hope that if they investigate and report, people will know more. But I don't think it's any sign at all that people are going to know more, because if they're not buying a newspaper now, why are they going to buy it if they don't want to know what's going on, why are they going to go buy a newspaper to not know what's going on? So I don't have a lot of confidence in what they were talking about. But there are those who have hopes that people will be more aware of what's going on and will be more interactive and will care about the rule of law. And clearly, Woodward and Bernstein feel that way. Both of them stated basically that. And before I forget, something you were mentioning about civil rights is that it does seem to be, it is a matter of what it is to get elected as to where each party stands. It's rarely that individuals take these stances. It's usual more that the party makes these stances. And that was the case back during the civil rights time. Republicans took the side of civil rights. Democrats were against it. Now the Democrats are for it, and the Republicans are against it. All this is about getting is to get the everybody herded into one thing at one place and say, we all believe the same thing, rah, 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 let's all go vote for one person, or one party, that is.
Yeah, there was on a talk show earlier today. Oh, I was trying to think which show it was. I was kind of bouncing around where there was a black guy was being interviewed talking about, you know, what's happening with Democrats and blacks, and saying, you know, the Hispanic, the mentality of the Democrat Party is, well, they've rounded up the blacks. Excuse me, they've rounded up the blacks. They've got the black vote. They don't have to work for it anymore. The black vote, they just totally ignore the black vote anymore because they have them brainwashed to the point that they will vote for them no matter what. And now they're out there rounding up the Hispanics. This is the mentality of the Democrat Party, and I don't think it's really that much different when it comes to the Republicans for the stupid games that they both play. But that is the total approach. It's like, we got to get the Latino vote in here now, and I said it in some blog I was just messing with, a Shark Tank blog. It's like, the fact is the Democrats have been converted over to progressive / socialist / communist, whatever you want to call it, and that's really where they're heading. They want to have a society that's totally dependent on the government, which means you are in a socialist communist society, when in fact everything is owned in common, and Big Brother, the government, tells you what you're allowed to do and when you're allowed to do it, and you have no rights to own private property. We are so close to that line, and you can't get the Democrats to realize they're losing all of their civil rights. You just can't get them there. And I'm not sure a lot of Republicans know it either, but that is the reality if people would just open their eyes and engage their brain for a few minutes. Excuse me.
Well, I think it's something quite a bit different involving the Spanish community here in the U.S. I think you can see that in much of the communities, and that is a general apathy to the country and to politics in general. It's very hard to get the Spanish community to go out and vote. Certain aspects, like Cubans, are likely to do it, but it's much less, very much less likely than those coming from, say, Mexico or South America, unless they're wealthy. They're just brought up to believe that one person is in charge and there's no reason to go vote because someone that's already selected is going to take that. If that is the case, then, and that is the growing, that will be the majority of this population somewhere around 2050. It'll be the majority here in Florida probably by 2030. If that's the case, then the elections are going to be a moot point. They'll still be around, but basically they will be even more than ever selected by the parties and not determined by the people. Our direction seems to be very clearly, not that we can do anything about it because of how population is, that this will be a this will no longer be a representative government come probably way before the turn of the century. I mean, it could even be by 2050 that we're no longer. There may be still some elections, but the elections are kind of like what's happening over in Iraq right now.
Right.
We're heading there right now, right this moment, as you're saying, Teresa Jacobs. We're heading there right now. And look at the percentage of Spanish in Orange County versus, say, Seminole County. Look at the voting numbers, the percentage numbers between Orange and Seminole County. There's a huge difference there. And if you look, as I have, into those areas that have specifically Spanish in them, the voting percentage is significantly less. Well, it's true for the black community, too, is significantly less, and poor white communities very much so also. As our state gets poorer, I think we're 2030 easily. We will be, you know, just there'll be a day to vote, but and some a percentage will go. But by then, a good deal of the baby boomers will be gone. So you're looking at the Spanish population. I mean, by 2030, we're looking at a whole other generation, basically, of Spanish being born from whatever exists right now. So you're basically looking not quite at doubling, but nearing doubling whatever the population is right this second.
Yeah.
Whereas the white population is...
The white population is not
reproducing at that rate, and so they will not be around. The black population is reproducing a higher rate than the white, but it's not enough to overcome the number of Spanish. I'm not saying that's good or bad. I'm just saying if the Spanish community is typically not voting, then I'm not saying anything new. This is stuff that's being written about, basically by sociologists and the political scientists out there recognizing where Florida is going, where the nation's going. It's not good or bad. It's just what's going to happen, and there's not much you can do about it based on the direction things are going right now. You're not changing the white situation at all. It's unlikely you're going to change the black. The Spanish population is not going to change except increase. The question is, will it increase faster than so far? It has been. It's been increasing incredibly faster than was predicted. The idea that Florida wasn't going to be majority Spanish until 2050. Now we're looking at 20. The general number is 2036, but I think we're looking more at 2030 now. That's a major change for a lot. And realize how soon that is. I mean, what year we're in now.
Right.
But realize most of Pinellas County.
Not very long away.
Most of Pinellas County, as it exists right now, the population of Pinellas County is gone. It literally is gone by 2030. The majority, because of the age they are. Anyone who's 60 right now is unlikely to still be here by 2030.
True.
So that's. There's still going to be some, but it's a lot of people gone, and that's a lot of the old. That's that we're talking about the baby boomer generation vanishing in thin air.
Yeah, well, the greatest generation's about gone now. The baby boomers are gone, and then there will be no founding Americans, if you will, where the culture was much more European. Now it will be Latino, Hispanic routine. And, we won't get into it tonight, but we'll have you back on to talk about how successful the Hispanics were in Florida's history. What's happened to that in the past.
I don't think you can quite compare, though I find it absolutely fascinating you think people would change over time, but it's not quite right to group everybody together. But if you look at how things have gone, say in Mexico, which are descendants of those who are in Florida, how things have gone there, not that much different than what happened while the Spanish were here 200 years ago. Fascinating stuff.
It is, and whether we say history it goes in cycles or repeats itself, it's all pretty interesting to me. And, we were another experiment in a free society that it lasted for a while, but it wasn't going to last forever. The nature of the beast, or the nature of the American or the human spirit, whatever it is, the greed, the power, just the various things that take away and this goes back, I think, so much to the Founding Fathers and how they said faith was so critical to a society. And I'm not a person who goes to church, but I do have a strong faith. It's just, to me, there's definitely a difference of right and wrong and good and evil. And that's the way I was raised. And I think we've lost that core sense of what right and wrong and good and evil. It's about, as we said earlier, all about me. It's whatever for me. I don't care about anybody else. And there is not that common sense or faith that that we need to believe. And I think that plays into the demise of it all, too. You know, I mean, there were always the bad guys, the ones, the cowboys, Jesse James, whatever, go back to the history of the various cowboys. Which, who knows if I'm even saying that right, but there were always the bank robbers. There was always somebody who would rob a bank, but the majority of people didn't think that way and didn't accept it. Now today, the mentality, and this is extremely true with the younger generation, the how many ways can I get something free from the government? When I grew up, getting welfare was was a bad thing. It's not that you didn't want to look down on those who needed assistance, but you didn't want to be one of those who needed it. And being a person who needed a handout was just not a good, you weren't proud of that. You wanted to be independent. You wanted to be self-sufficient and take care of yourself. You didn't want to have to go beg for stuff. Now it's an art. It's come to a point of being an art of how we can beg for stuff. And this whole mentality or attitude about what we are as an individual, which, again, comes ultimately back down to what is your core faith? What is right and wrong? Is it right for you to spend all your time figuring out ways to become a recipient of food stamps, or is it your place to see what you can do in the society to promote it and to contribute to it? To me, it's more like, what can I do to get some kind of subsidies for health care? What can I do to get free food stamps? What can I do to get a free phone? What can I do to get Section 8 housing so that I can go sit on the beach and do nothing? That just seems to be the goal. People seem to actually be proud that they can do that. And I was never raised to be proud of reaching off a system.
I just had that experience this weekend with a number of young people who I've never talked to so many young people who just want to drink, and they feel like it's an obligation, it's their job. You talk to people who have jobs, and their job is to get out of their job, their not real job, and go to their real job and get inebriated in one form or another.
Yeah, and it's the more I read up on the founding fathers and their faith, it just comes together, and I understand it so much more than what I was ever taught in school. That's for sure. But and then you see the decline of the culture, and you just understand that it's all about that individual. It's not about, and you know, in a free society, we believe it is all about being an individual, making choices and having responsibility. But it seems to be, how many ways can I party, do nothing, whatever, versus how do I contribute and make the society better? What do I do to help my neighbor routine? It's not that attitude at all anymore. It's totally the other. And that's, again, the decline. The United States of America is falling. No, if we don't have a major attitude change, it's going to collapse. And there are those who have said, and I believe it in a sense, I can agree, they said it's Americans. It will not be the Americans that save America. It will be the new immigrant Americans and saying that those who are who have come to America seeking freedom, who remember the oppression because it wasn't that long ago, they're the ones who will stand up and fight more so or appreciate what we have here than it will be the Americans who have, the spoiled Americans, if you will, who have grown up in the society and no longer truly appreciate the history, what it took to get here. They won't understand until they no longer have rights to that cell phone. And when they start losing those rights, and they're being told when they can come and go, and by the way, you can't get drunk tonight, and these kind of things, which to a certain degree, I think the Greeks, what happened that occupied the idiots routine was to have them watch games and get them drunk. That's a way to control people. And you can't get Americans to understand this, that those in power can control you by substance abuse and by the entertainment. And they totally distract you from what's really going on. They're taking away your rights, gnawing away at it while you're over here drunk and watching a football game, clueless to what's going on around you. And you'll never even know what hit you. It's not going to be some massive, oh, by the way, tomorrow we're going to all be communists. It's this gnawing away of your rights, and we are so far down. I don't know if we can be saved or not. I just don't know. I don't know if this country can survive.
Whatever this country is, whatever happens, it doesn't really matter. The numbers are against the idea of a representative government. It could happen. I'd say the likelihood of it is practically impossible because of the population shift. Whether you bring people in from the Mideast or bring people from South America, neither are coming from countries that understand representative government. Why would they recreate it here? That doesn't make any sense, especially when they show very little care of doing anything. I mean, they left the places to come here, not to continue it, not to recreate. They came from some place where they didn't want to fight it and change it. They left it to come here for apparently to make money, which is what seems to be the major drive. If that's the case, materialism, then it's certainly not indicative of someone looking for representative government. I compare all this to welfare free stuff, to drugs again. Once you start getting handed the stuff you want more, you can't stop getting it. You got to keep getting it, and so you create a situation where you will always get it.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. That's exactly what's happening here. Where my mother used to say it, and the way she would explain, there's going to come a time when the government will do more for the people than the people do for themselves. And when you get to that point, it's over, because now you are a subservient, you're a serf, subservient to the government, and now they totally control you because now they give you more than what you do for yourself. And it's that's where we're heading. So I don't know. Excuse me. So I don't know. I just I don't see.
I do. I feel pretty confident about it myself. I think it's important that we kind of recognize where we are, where we're probably going. Again, it's not positive. Looks pretty certain. And I don't see how this could be different. Reading so much about it really has helped me understand where we're going and where we're headed. So I'm more under. I guess it's okay. It's okay. It's okay that we're gonna. You can't. The democracies aren't supposed to continue, or not that they're not supposed to. Not like there's some dictum written someplace. No, it's just historically they haven't typically been able to survive. And here we go again.
Exactly.
always for these very reasons, because they always will try to give away the house.
Yep.
In the end.
Yep, the nature of the beast. Well, one other question here before we have to wrap it up for the night. We've got about 10 minutes left. Now, going back to the situation, assuming the Republicans are in both houses of Congress, what do you truly think the Republicans will do about Obamacare? Do you think they'll stop funding it? Do you think they'll make any attempt to? They know they can't truly repeal it because Obama would never sign it, but they could defund it. What do you think they will do about Obamacare?
Well, whatever is best for the party, and it'll be constructed as such. If it's best for the party to keep it around, it'll be kept. If it's not, then it won't be. If there's enough of an outcry against it, then it seems like it might have a reflection in 2016. Then they'll try to do what they can. They're not getting anywhere though. If they're able to accomplish taking over in November, they're not going to get it done in the next 2 years. They'd have to wait until afterward if they get a Republican president, which
but you don't think
pretty
they could defund it.
But in 2 years, with Obama in charge, no.
Well, I keep hearing this thing about the House controls the purse strings.
Yeah, but you still have the VP. This is the thing of it. The Democrats are actually in charge of Congress. The Democrats almost make up half of the House. They're in charge of the Senate. The Vice President is still there at the top of that, and you have the President who's a Democrat. So Congress is being run by the Democratic Party. Republicans only have a say in the House, and otherwise they're trumped across the board. And even in the House, they only have a say up to a point until the Democrats step in. So if you look at that right now, even if the Republicans take over the House and have the Senate, it's not as if all the Democrats have gone. I don't understand why people talk as if all the Democrats don't exist anymore in Congress.
Oh, no, they don't.
They're still the majority of all of Congress. Now, so if the Republicans take over the House, you still have Democrats there, and you still have a Democrat vice president who'll be chairing things, and you still have a president. You're not going to get something like that through as long as he's president. Now, maybe after. Now, if the Democratic Party completely turns on Obama, which politically they may need to do, if that happens, then maybe. But otherwise, they're not defunding anything. maybe
well,
2 years from now, if
just for the fun of it.
Yeah, if a Republican becomes president in 2 years, Possibly. It all depends on how much money. As I say, it's again, gosh, I'm sorry. I am going to this drug thing a lot. Sorry about that. But yeah, the cartels are contributing a lot. Not just that the legalization would occur here in Florida, so then that this opens the door for the cartels to be able to pay for politicians to run to back them up in things they want done here in Florida and then also in Congress. So with that, once you open up those purse strings, especially with something like the cartels, it never ends. But once you do the same thing with this Obamacare, now you've got the insurance companies who have basically open purse strings, and the pharmaceutical companies have open purse strings, and you've got the doctor set. There's a lot of talk about how all these doctors are retiring. Well, a lot of these are American doctors who are retiring. What's taking their place are doctors from overseas who are coming over who don't necessarily have the background, they don't necessarily have the experience, and they don't charge as much. Their structure is so very different. Well, they're used to something like Obamacare. So as Greatest Generation or the baby boom doctors retire and you get them from overseas, they want Obamacare. That's all they know. That's what they left in their other countries. So, yeah, I mean, the likelihood is not going away.
Yeah, that's the sad truth of it all. That's the sad truth. And that's why I kind of want to talk about what does it really mean if the Republicans win? Because I was saying it doesn't really mean a whole lot. I mean, to me, when it comes to the border, neither have ever wanted to secure the border. So I think people will be greatly disappointed if we end up with Republicans in both houses and something in the border still isn't secured. It's like, gosh, I wonder why. The greed, once again, the money and the greed takes over. You have a few of those, Jeff Sessions, Senator Sessions, he's out there talking about the true impact of what's going on, the fiscal impact of all of this, how it's harming Americans, but very few truly go down and talk about what's truly happening on that border. Do I think Boehner for 1 minute cares about securing that border? Absolutely not. He doesn't. He's doing whatever he thinks he has to do to stay on that, stay as that speaker, which hopefully that would also change. But the Republican Party just isn't too smart these days. Call me a critic of it or whatever, but it just seems like they're just not too smart. So I keep saying, well, the Republican Party keeps doing itself in too. So we go with the way that the Republican Party goes. And on that note, we've got 3 minutes left here. Thank you so much for tuning in. Any last words of wisdom before people head to the ballot box?
Eat more ice cream.
Eat ice cream, not pot.
Lots of ice cream.
Ice cream.
Chocolate.
Yes.
Vanilla. Doesn't matter. mixed ice cream. Yep.
Yep.
No, just ice cream.
Okay. No hot fudge?
No, just ice cream. If you want to go get condiments, go right ahead. But otherwise, just some regular good old ice cream. Keep yourself cold and cool. Tastes good, too.
Mm-hmm. This is true. Well, anyway, thanks again for joining the discussion tonight. It's always interesting. Excuse me. I'm trying to fight a cold here, I think. It's very interesting discussion. And we shall see what happens next. There's no telling. So,
breaking news. Robin Williams is still dead. Okay, go ahead.
He did not.
I can't believe how they're expanding this. The news is still talking about it. I think Robin Williams will be joking all about this to see if he's still with us. It's so ridiculous. He's dead. Let's go on. Okay. Especially if he killed himself. Stop talking about me. Jeez. All right. Go ahead. I'm sorry you have a minute left.
That's okay. Well, anyway, you're going to be on in a couple weeks, and we are going to talk about the history of Florida. We'll get into more of that. And we'll take one last shot at talking about the Amendment 2 here in Florida and why people need to get out and vote for what's good, not what,
vote against it. Vote against Amendment 2. Vote no.
Right. Go. That's what I'm saying. Voting for keeping your head straight and not voting for the drugs. It's good to keep your head straight, not to vote for drugs.
Vote against the cartels. Vote against more drive-by shootings, vote against what happens to youth, especially in the black communities, because of this. It's horrible and sad. And we shouldn't be trying to encourage more of that, which is what this does. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yep, exactly. We need to change our attitude and start being a society that's responsible for itself once again instead of all the other craziness that's happened. But anyway, we truly are down to the last minute. On that note, thank you for joining and thank you for tuning in. And please be Americans, participate in the process. It's your country. Assume some responsibility for it. Excuse me. And may God bless America. Good night, everyone.